welcome to another episode of Indie Darlings, the podcast where we discuss films that we consider to be an indie darling. Now, these movies can be considered a darling for good or bad reasons. It's just a film that stands out. And today's special guest is not only my producer, but a friend, movie connoisseur, Dave Christensen.
Hi, Connie.
Hello.
I feel like I rolled my eyes and laughed when you called me a film connoisseur.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I know a couple people that would agree with me on that.
Not going to disagree with it. It's just a funny title to get.
It's a connoisseur. You take a film, you put it in a brandy glass, and you swirl it around.
That's exactly what I do.
Yeah.
I sniff it before I watch it.
Yeah. And spit it out afterwards. another reason I'm excited for today's show is the film we watched is a recent one called First Reformed. It came out this year, 2018, and is directed and written by Paul Schrader, best known for Taxi Driver, and starring Ethan Hawke, Amanda Seyfried, Cedric the Entertainer, who does not go by that name in the credits.
What does he go by? What's his real name?
Cedric. Why did I just close this window?
That's all right.
But I remember when I was watching the credits, I was like, ooh, we going by our real name.
Yeah, I think I noticed that too. And now just remembering, I was like, what is his real name?
Cedric Kyles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But everyone did a great job. But I remember, well, Cedric's very memorable, but like, I'm like, you're doing a great job, man. Because he plays a reverend in this. So this movie was shot. It's an A24 film. It was shot in 20 days. $3.5 million, which is a handful of change in movie terms. Dave, why are you excited to talk about this film?
I'm excited to talk about this film because... how excited I was about the movie after seeing it. I won't even say before, because going in, I didn't really have any expectations other than I knew it was a new Paul Schrader. And not that I can't call myself a huge Paul Schrader fan by any means.
Well, because he's had some real ups and downs.
Yeah, and I think to be honest, I don't think I've seen enough to even understand what his downs completely look like.
The latest film I saw by him was The Canyons with Lindsay Lohan, and that's like supposed to be notoriously bad.
Yeah.
And I saw it, and it didn't. It promised what it delivered.
Okay, great. Yeah. But other than that, I've only seen like Taxi Driver. That's a script he wrote. He did not direct it, of course. Raging Bull he wrote. But the movies he's directed are very far and few. Like, I realize I haven't seen a lot of his. And that's kind of there's a couple now on my list that I want to see because of First Reformed, mainly because of what people associate and what he's talked about in regards to First Reformed. But what made me even more excited, other than just Paul being Paul Schrader's movie, was as I was watching it, everything kept flooding back to me immediately, even at just the choice of framing, the frame ratio. It's the 4:8, or I think is what it is. If I get that ratio wrong, I'm sorry, but it's the cube. It's what for a long time, like most television was shot on. And the way he shoots his movie got me super excited as I watched it, because I read a book that he wrote back in college. I mean, he wrote it, I think, in college. I read it when I was in college, just to clarify that statement. But it's called Transcendental Style and Film, and it's him focusing on Ozu, Dreher, and Bresson. I've never seen an Ozu movie, never seen a Dreher movie, but I just picked it up because I like Robert Bresson a lot, who he just kind of puts into this category of making transcendental films. What probably most Hollywood would call them is slow. They call them slow films. Which doesn't bother me. If something's meant to be paced a certain way and you hit it, then I think you're doing the right thing. It's slow to me means you chose a fast pace and you're not hitting it.
What's an example of a transcendental film?
Ooh, that's a hard question. Because I mean, Robert Bresson, I think, is the one I understand it the most from.
Mm-hmm.
He has a movie that's very, very similar to First Reformed in some sense,
uh-huh.
called, I believe, The Diary of a Country Priest. I might be getting that title a little off.
Mm-hmm.
That's about a guy kind of sort of going, like, I think he's ill and he's sort of you know what I mean? Just going through different, like his faith, dealing with his faith and such.
Mm-hmm.
He has other movies, one called Ah Hazard Balthazar,
mm-hmm.
which is about the life of a donkey.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like it's quiet and moves you and you kind of like, you're more like just, I think you're left more of like a feeling than you are like, oh, this is like supposed to be driven by like a strong plot driven story,
mm-hmm.
which I think is traditionally what we watch.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, most audiences love a really thick plotted narrative, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And these movies don't do that.
Yeah.
They're mostly supposed to, they're exploring sort of higher things.
Yeah.
And in this sense, First Reformed and some of Bresson's, it's like he's trying to explore like the religious side of man.
Well, what element? Okay. Let's briefly go through the summary for First Reformed.
Yeah, go ahead for the, okay. the listeners. For sure.
First Reformed, for people that don't know, is about Ethan Hawke, who plays a reverend, Ernst Toller, who's, it says his name in the summary, 46 years old. He is a widow. Not a widow, sorry. He was married before, had a son, you find out in while he's telling someone, but his son was killed in combat in Iraq, and Ethan his marriage fell apart quickly afterwards, and you find out that the son didn't want to go overseas to Iraq, but Ethan urged him to, and so the guilt destroyed his marriage and is kind of destroying him because you see his, well, okay, so the movie has voiceover narration, mm-hmm. by Toller, and it's him reading what's happening to him over the course of a year, and you see that he drinks every night, like kind of heavily,
terribly heavily. Like,
yeah.
There's a scene where they show a garbage can pretty much full of bottles.
Oh, and this film, they were making jokes about it on NPR saying, have you done the First Reformed cocktail? It's Pepto-Bismol and bourbon.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's very
it's
gross.
It's very morbid.
Yeah, because
it's a cocktail for alcoholics.
Yeah, well, because the excess alcohol is hurting your stomach, so you're pouring Pepto-Bismol into your bourbon so you can swallow it.
Oh,
yeah, it's disgusting. Okay, so he's a reverend at a church that's primarily a tourist attraction. It's a really old church.
Yeah, it seems to be. It's historically,
yeah,
a historical church that,
yeah.
He does have services there, but the mm-hmm. community doesn't really go to it.
Well, it's in a community that has a huge church,
like a mega church.
Yeah, it's pretty much a mega church run by Reverend Joel Jeffers, played by Cedric the Entertainer. They're friends with each other, but everyone's kind of worried about Ethan Hawke's character, and someone comes to him for help. Amanda Seyfried's character named Mary, and she is worried about her husband who has, she's worried he's going to attempt suicide because he is part of a coalition of,
I don't even know if she's worried about suicide. Is she worried about,
I think she's worried about
he's going to hurt himself, but plus also hurt others.
Oh yeah. He's
even more,
he's part
so,
of an
so like,
a radical group of environmentalists that,
right.
Are the type. I'm trying to figure out the least offensive way to say this. The type to wear a chest bomb.
Yes, but that comes later because I think the first concern, though, real quick, I think the first concern is not even suicide or harm. It's mm-hmm. that doesn't she find out she's pregnant?
Oh, that's right. That's
and
right, yeah.
she and he says, and his whole thing is
he doesn't want her.
He doesn't
want to
have it because
yeah, the environment,
the world they live in. And so she's like, I need you to come talk to my husband.
Yeah,
like so it starts off a little bit like there's still concern, but mm-hmm. it escalates to the point of him having a
yeah
explosive vest.
Yeah. She goes to him for help. He is immediately drawn to her, and he actually enjoys talking to her husband, who is clearly very troubled. They have the most in my opinion, exhausting conversation about why, whether or not the world is doomed.
Right.
And I mean, I...
It's a fascinating conversation, actually. Yeah. It's very... It's insane how well written that conversation is.
Yeah.
And on top of how well written it is, how well acted it is, because it never feels... It never feels like... It doesn't ever feel preachy. It really does feel like a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, like, so well written.
Yeah. Like, they both make very compelling arguments. Like, her husband talks about... the facts about ocean levels rising, how the human population is going to destroy itself, and what is the point, and why would you bring a child into this? And then Toller is just like living with the good and the bad. That's wisdom. I mean, living with two conflicting thoughts.
Yeah,
is wisdom. And the dialogue in this movie is fantastic.
Mainly because it's very sparse.
Yeah,
to some degree. Like,
nothing feels like what's so interesting is because Ethan Hawke is very, he does talk like a reverend, but the dialogue in this never feels flowery or superficial. It feels very to the point, but also accurate.
I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. And okay, so she helps convince her husband that it's okay for his wife to have a baby. And, but then it quickly escalates to she calls him again because she finds a bomb vest in his stuff that he is keeping from her. And she's worried she's going to try to blow up a building with people in it. And, what's so unfortunate, and this plot gets further complicated when, Toller finds out that some of the church is tied in with the oil companies that he's okay. So her husband, spoiler, kills himself.
Yeah.
In an
insane way too leads.
He shoots himself
to find him.
He shoots himself in a park.
Moments after, like, at least minutes after
calling him,
telling or texting Ernst to meet him at the park.
Yeah. And Ernst shows up and he's just, his head's blown away while he's in the park. And his last wishes were to have his funeral at an oil spill site.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then have, yeah, it's, I like that scene a lot. His funeral scene is pretty out there.
It's kind of bonkers. Don't they have like a musical performance?
Yeah, they sing like this funny song about like, I wish I could sing it right now and remember the lyrics, but it's essentially, he has like the church choir of children sing this song. It's about like,
oh, isn't it
the world falling apart.
Isn't it a Bob Dylan song?
It might be a Bob Dylan
song. It's either a Bob Seger song or a Bob Dylan song.
Probably Bob Dylan. I don't think Seger's going to be doing much protest songs.
But yeah, I remember it's the most awkward funeral. And
as most funerals are.
Well, because it's at an oil drill site.
You have
children there singing a protest song. The media catch wind of this. And then so his picture's taken in the paper. He has a meeting with Cedric's character, Joel Jeffers, and they have a meeting with another member of the megachurch, and he finds out, and the megachurch is basically telling Ethan, leave it alone, because Ethan starts to try to pick up where her husband left off.
Yeah.
And then the church tells him to back off, and Ethan's like, why? You're poisoning people. And then he finds out that the church is financially connected to the oil company that had the spill.
Right.
And this causes him to have a crisis of faith, which is hard because he's already...
Which I would argue that he's already in a crisis
he's
of
already,
faith.
Yeah, he's already.
This just sort of sends him... There's many interpretations of what this sends this character.
Yeah, like it sends him into a tailspin, and he, because he's already in a bad place.
Yeah,
because he's already in mourning for his son. He's rejecting that poor woman Esther,
who is
begging him to date her. There's a woman who's a choir leader at the church, who's they had like sort of a thing at one point. And she keeps trying to hit him up, and finally he just lashes out at her in a way that's so cringeworthy. Like, he full on says, I despise you.
Yeah.
And
she does not like her. Just can't stand her being around. And I think it's a little bit of her neediness too. She comes off a little bit needy of him.
Yeah.
Trying to be, or like needy in the sense of wanting to be like to save him. Mm-hmm. That seems to drive him crazy.
I was Googling because all the women in this movie, they're named after Bible characters. Esther, I was trying to figure out if there's some symbology behind her character's name, but I'm like, other than, because she's a heroine in the Bible, I don't see a connection other than that it's a biblical name, but her, I felt so bad for her character. Ugh. Because Ethan's, his character's very soft-spoken in this, and he just, like, he loses it. He full-on just, like, I hate you. I hate your face.
Yeah.
I hate the way you make me feel. Get away from me. And I'm just like,
ugh. Yeah, he crushes her. But I also think what I love about that scene is, like, I feel like
he had to do it.
Yeah, like I feel for both of them because I feel like, oh, I'm so mad that she had to hear that, but she kept, in a sense, she kept probing she kept poking the tiger, and he was just like ignore, like, hey, I don't want that. Don't worry about it.
Like
we're done. But she kept wanting it, and so he kept thinking that she'll get the point.
Yeah,
and he lashed out.
Yeah,
it was. I love that scene because it's so uncomfortable but earned.
So Tuller decides, because they're going to have a special ceremony at, is it his church or is it the mega church?
Yeah, they're doing it at, it's first, yeah, they're doing like some memorial or anniversary.
I think it's an 100 anniversary.
100 year or something, yeah. At the First Reformed.
Yeah.
Which is the church.
What's the name of the church?
Of the historical church that he now. So they're going to do, and he's going to do the service at it.
Yeah.
So he gets the idea. You can continue.
Oh, he takes the bomb vest that the husband left behind, and he's going to use it at that ceremony to make a statement. But as he's getting ready to do this, he sees Amanda Seyfried's character, Mary, pop in, and he realizes if he goes through with it, he's going to end up killing. At this point, he's fallen in love with her. They do this thing where she comes, they start spending a lot of time together since her husband died, but there's also a moment where she comes over and they do this weird little game that she used to do with her husband where they lay on top of each other and maintain eye contact. And this causes him to have a surreal, almost, how would you describe this?
I mean, it's very magical,
realism.
Magical realism. You could say out of body experience.
Yeah.
He has
a psychedelic experience. Like all of a sudden you see their bodies like levitate and then go like travel across the globe. You see a bunch of nature. And then all of a sudden you see oil factories and pollution. And it's basically, it's as if him doing that exercise with her helped transverse him into her world.
Yeah.
Like, so you see all the beauty that she sees, but also her point of view.
Or you could say that his growing care for her sort of gave him catalyst to sort of push himself to that point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
We'll get to it after the synopsis. Yeah.
That's why I love this movie so much.
Yeah, there's so much room for interpretation.
Like, and I don't even think in bat, like loose interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a movie where it's like, I can't tell what this director wants.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I have to like try to put it together. I do think Paul Schrader wrote it with a clear thing in mind.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he was just telling a type of movie or story where he's like, you guys can make, I'm not going to lead you with my hand.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to hold your hand through this, which
I think he wants people to ask questions and wants people to be unsure, because this leads to the ending where he sees Amanda Seyfried walk into the church. He told her not to come.
Yeah.
But she gots to see him. And so he's flipping out. He doesn't know what to do now. So he ultimately decides to kill himself, and he does it in the most fucked up way possible. He gets a bunch of barbed wire that was outside of the church and wraps his body in it.
Yeah, because that part's like, that feels like a weird penance. But then he's also,
well, it's just like Jesus on the cross.
Sort of thing. Seems very Yeah.
With now, that symbol. I saw this with you, and the next part made me like gasp at you. He gets Drano and pours it into his bourbon glass.
Oh.
And it's like it's a blue gel. So he's going to basically drink all this Drano while wrapped in barbed wire. And right before he's about to drink the Drano, Amanda Seyfried's character comes in, calls his name, stops him, and they have a kiss.
That, like, the camera swirls around.
Yeah.
Which it's really almost the very, this and maybe one other movement the camera moves.
Yeah.
The camera rarely moves in this movie.
Yeah. It definitely, the camera moves in a way that makes it not fit with the rest of the movie. So it makes you wonder.
It does, but it doesn't.
It makes you wonder. Also, she hugs him. He's covered in barbed wire and wearing a white robe.
Yeah.
None of the blood's coming out.
Right.
So I think what we settled on, what happened, is that he died. He did die. And that our interpretation is that he, because the movie just ends on him getting a kiss.
Yeah, it ends right after this moment.
And so what I think happened is that he died, and that was him arising into heaven, because you don't see the blood through the robe.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally gets to kiss Mary.
I didn't know what was going on. I still loved the movie. It was not a moment where I was like, fuck this ending. I don't know that.
Yeah.
It came out of the blue.
Yeah.
Or like from left field.
Yeah.
I just was like, I don't know if I get it fully.
Yeah.
Went home, listened to a couple of interviews with Ethan Hawke. Mm-hmm. One with Ethan Hawke, a couple with Paul Schrader.
Mm-hmm.
I think I prescribe to that same interpretation, mm-hmm. but I do like what Paul Schrader has said about it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm just glad I've got to listen to podcasts where he'll talk about spoilers rather than just vaguely promote his movie.
Well, you don't have to mention the whole podcast, but like, what's something that stuck out to you that Paul Schrader said about this?
Well, the ending specifically, he just says you can see it two ways.
Mm-hmm.
Either you see that she walked in and he did not and saved him.
Mm-hmm.
Or he drank that Drano. He met God and God says, you want to see heaven? And his interpretation of heaven is this long. It's like heaven would be this long mm-hmm. embrace.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Either one works.
Yeah.
I sort of prescribe to the other more magical one. The only reason I prescribe more to that one is because he's setting you up for it.
Yeah.
I think with the scene where they lay on each other,
mm-hmm.
he's saying this is also exists here. Mm-hmm. So therefore I'm like, okay, then the ending has to be, it seemed, why would he put that in there? Why mm-hmm. have that moment if it's not going to be for something later?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think he's dead.
Yeah, I think he's dead too.
I think he couldn't live. He couldn't go on. I think he didn't understand. I mean, couldn't blow up her, of course.
Yeah.
Therefore, he couldn't be a martyr. So then he just had to go out with a little bit of penance with that barbed wire and the Drano.
Well, there's a couple of reasons why I really like this movie. One, I love the way it was shot. It was shot in a way that reminded me a lot of Southern Gothic films. And it also, the story of a disillusioned clergyman really made me think of the other film by Flannery O'Connor's, based on her story, Wise Blood. I was reading the trivia about this online, and they're saying the scene with the barbed wire is similar, might have been based on Wise Blood, actually.
I haven't seen it. I'll have to check. I need to check it out.
I recommend reading it. The way it's shot cinematography wise, it's very much Southern Gothic, very simplistic, but also very moody. And lost my train of thought already. Oh, okay. Okay. I also listened to the podcast with Ethan Hawke and Paul Schrader. And the thing I like about it is the way there's a lot of philosophy in this movie. And one thing that Ethan Hawke mentions is that, okay, so his character, Reverend Toller, he was willing to die for this cause, but was he willing to die for this cause, or did he just want to die?
So yeah, I think that's a good question to understand. But it's easier to die if you're wanting to die. It's mm-hmm. easier to die for something rather yeah. than just want to die for nothing.
Yeah, because he's borderline suicidally sad, and him becoming a martyr, is that him being a good person, or is that a symptom of mental illness? That's something that Ethan mentions, and I'm like, that's so true. Like, we see people who commit these great acts of faith, but it's like, is that a great act of faith, or were you just going through a really rough time and we're looking for a way out?
For sure.
And I'm like, that's a very interesting argument. And then there's also the argument of him potentially killing people and breaking the law, but also being a man of God. So it's like, they mention in the movie at a time. Oh, there's that scene where there's a field trip at the church.
Yeah.
First Reformed. And
he's like giving a little tour.
Yeah. And they had underground slaves. They hid them there. It was the Underground Railroad was a part of the church. And so it's a little brief example of the time the church disobeyed the government. And I thought that was an interesting, at first it felt out of place, but then I was like, oh, they're showing moments where the church disagreed with the government. And instead, in their mind, chose to do the right thing.
Right.
And so I think there's also that thing where when the church operates outside of the law, are they still doing the right thing? And then it makes you wonder, how do you know what to do when the right thing is illegal?
Right. I mean, I think we're always conflicted with that, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even if like, especially in times of our country right now, mm-hmm. even when it's like almost fully clear of like where we, like what side you want to be on and to be, there's a lot, I don't know if these planes are coming through or not, but there's a lot of plane traffic apparently all of
it's
a sudden.
It's summertime.
But I'm laughing. But it's easy for sometimes easy to see what's the right side.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Guess that, I mean, there's an argument to be made that like all the time it's hard to choose which is right or wrong. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it takes big, terrible things mm-hmm. for us to all go, no, that's wrong. I don't know. There's a big, much bigger conversation with more intelligent people to be had there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think. I really enjoyed this movie because it did feel like a religious movie, but it didn't feel like a preachy movie.
No, not at all. And I think that is him attempting to do a transcendental style movie. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think any transcendental style movie really tries to tell you how to feel or anything.
Yeah.
It just sort of tells a story a different way. Definitely a slower burn that, as I said before, is how they most are likely characterized. Mm-hmm. But again, he's a director that's stealing from that. One other thing that I pulled from like the interviews I've listened to recently is his advice of like how everybody steals. And he's all, the only thing you got to do is just make sure you don't steal from you don't go back to the same place twice. Because if you start continually stealing from the same thing, mm-hmm. people will notice. Mm. He's like, you have to steal from over here. You have to steal a little from here, a little mm-hmm. from there. And you'll make your own thing out of it. Mm-hmm. But you can't keep going back to this. Once you've stolen something once, you can't go back. And I'm like, oh, okay, I can see that. Because like, there's a lot of things in here that we could probably, like you said, with that... that book.
Wise Blood?
Yeah. For all I know, you know, he got inspired by that. Mm-hmm. But I think there's nothing wrong with that in some sense.
No.
Unless you're just fully ripping it off and thinking you've been created. But that's not the case.
No. I mean, I doubt even Flannery O'Connor created that, so.
Yeah. I mean, and again, who cares? In the end. But I do love the film style. It does harpen back to those, if you watch Bresson movies. Mm-hmm. The one director out of the three that he wrote about back in his early days before he became a writer, a professional in Hollywood himself, it's that style so present in this movie. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite choices that in so many scenes end with a character leaving frame and our camera stays.
Mm-hmm.
And it just stays for a couple of beats.
There's a couple of and moments where it feels like a play almost.
Yeah. But it's just I don't have the right thing that just, it leaves you something. You've cause I think we're so used also to things, the scene's done, we're cutting to the next thing. And not that that's bad. Like, I don't want to like come off saying like, man, every movie should be this pace or a fast paced movie is bad. I'm like, I don't agree with that either or.
This, the way this was shot really did fit the story. There's a level of sparseness. There's a level of minimalism, but there's also like a sense of not knowing, which is really helpful in this camera movement.
Yeah, the camera rarely moves. When he edits, I just love the idea that characters leave the scene. The scene is over, but we stay, and the camera just keeps recording what got left behind.
It gives you this omnipresent view of this story. I might be over-interpreting here.
Maybe. Who cares about who?
But because I don't know, it's because like sometimes that can happen in a scene and not work. But it felt like it worked for it because there, it gives you the sense of like, because this is a movie about faith, and to have a scene where the character just left and then to just soak in the scene, something about that gives you like an almost like an omnipresent view of the story. And I thought that was an interesting attempt in a story about faith.
Yeah, totally. It made me value faith, even though I'm a big anti-organized religion person.
For the listeners, can you tell people your background in that?
Yeah, I grew up Mormon in Utah, born and raised. And I just, through all that, I just did not agree with the way it was. Because I feel like with this faith to me... And again, you could probably sit some person down here that has great faith, could tell me more about it. But somebody that actually has true faith, I actually admire. But when they're like, their faith is based in just getting others to get on board, I'm like, you're no worse than, like, we've had like a big surgence in popularity of like cult documentaries or talking about cults right now.
Yeah.
Mainly because that one that happened in Hollywood just recently.
Oh, yeah.
I can't even remember the name of it, but I'm like, I don't know if religion is that far off.
Yeah, I mean, it all started just somewhere.
Yeah, it all started somewhere, and they all have in their history of like, we got to have more members. We're just not going to do it in that real culty. Just because your values are not, don't end up leaning towards an abusive or sexual
cults are the ones that always end up with they get caught committing some sort of criminal activity and covering it up. And that's when the word cult gets brought in.
Yeah. And I'm like, no, oh, that's what you guys are doing.
And I mean, to be fair, the Catholic Church did a massive cover up with the child abuse scandals with priests.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's because they're on such a massive worldwide scale, it's not considered a cult anymore. It's just considered an abomination.
Yeah. It's fascinating. I find religion very fascinating.
Yeah.
I have since very early.
Yeah.
It's a thing I will always strike my curiosity, but I'm really ready for Christianity to like take a break.
I mean,
that's going to have all these people are going to come after me. But I'm like, you guys need to take a break because I think you've lost your faith.
I think you
know what faith is. And yeah. I think a movie like this, for example, to me goes, I think this movie gives me a better idea of what true faith is based on the guy that's lost it.
Yeah.
And really understanding his loss of like not understanding what true faith is versus what you're told faith is.
What's so interesting is he's very critical of himself. And when he wants to commit the martyrdom, he wonders like, he doubts his true intentions.
Right.
Which I'm like, more of us need to be doing that.
100%.
And like I think a problem with religion right now is that it's dividing this country because a lot of people are focused on the negative aspects of what the church has been doing, like not being tolerant of homosexuals, focusing abortion on abortion, focusing on how anti-women it can be. And I'm like, none of the Bible started off with that. It was
probably at its roots, but it's like, yeah. Unfortunately, I do think a lot of the writing was written by men, and so it tends to be anti-women, at least.
Also, like, like centuries ago. It was written centuries ago.
It's just, well, again, I'm as controversial as anybody that's not well-educated in religion, but whatever. It's just people not, I hate the word woke, but it's like, people need to wake up to like what is happening today rather than using these archaic, supposedly holy books, but they're just fucking archaic now.
Well, the thing
they don't speak for the day you live in.
Well, they're also picking and choosing which parts they're gonna interpret literally,
and they're interpreting them wrong.
Yeah,
no, like this whole thing about the immigrants down at the borders.
Yeah,
whatever what's his fucking name? Not Trump, but the guy that was really behind it. I can't even think of. I'm glad I can't remember his name because he was a monster.
Sessions?
Yeah, Sessions fucking interpreted everything. He kept quoting Bible quotes to like justify himself. Yeah. And he's like, you're getting it all wrong anyway.
Yeah.
Fucking monsters. It was
just, yeah, because like the thing is like with this movie interprets religion like, well, the way Toller's character does is that he's like, how are we helping people?
Yeah.
Not how do we justify this law? It's more like he sees a problem. He sees it almost in its raw form. And he's like, "How I see someone suffering. How can I help them?"
Right.
And I think people, especially right now, are not viewing religion on those terms.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I do think some things can become like Paul Schrader has talked too about how. Is this guy really trying to die for a cause? And this might speak for what you said about Ethan Koch, or is he just caught a virus?
Yeah.
That he just, this kid sort of spread a virus of, not that his virus didn't start out like a good cause, but it became so obsessive that it destroyed him.
Yeah.
Because I do think that there is the flip side, which right now is harder to harder to get behind because our world is so shitty, at least politically and, you know, in more aspects than not. But like, it is sometimes hard to be like, you can't let your whole life get carried away and to the point where like, now it's meaningless. Yeah. That seems as dangerous as religion to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because like, and I know we're all capable of that because we've all had our dark times, but like that scares me more than, that scares me as much as if I was to like tomorrow wake up and be like, guys, I believe in fucking Scientology.
It's just, it's a movie that's constantly questioning itself and it's so refreshing. And I think these times, especially.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's asking the questions rather than trying to answer them, which I think a lot of people think that's a bad thing. And I'm like, I don't know if I agree. I don't need somebody. We don't need to have everybody answering the questions for us.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have a lot of times we're unwilling to ask a question, I think, more than there's too many of us that think we have the answer.
Mm-hmm.
and half the reason we think we have the answer is that we're not asking the right fucking questions anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's safe to say that we both enjoyed this film.
Hell yeah. I honestly think this is one of the best movies of this year.
I agree.
I hope. I mean, as much as awards are dumb and they're meaningless,
I would like this to get nominated at least.
For exceptions. There are exceptions. Yeah. I still like award season. I hate pitting things against each other.
I would like this. What do you think? If it had to only get one nomination, what do you think it should get?
Ooh, that's tough. Because I want there at least be three. If I had to pick one, I'll say this. I'll tell you what I think it deserves, then I'll tell you what if I had to figure it out. I think it needs Best Actor. Uh-huh. I think Ethan Hawke really...
I'm not an Ethan Hawke fan, and I loved him in this.
I'm not either. I'm not like a guy that's like... I don't even hate him. I just forget about him.
Yeah.
But this movie, he's phenomenal in.
Yeah, like it had to be him.
Best writing, I think it needs.
Yeah.
Best original writing and best directing.
Yeah.
I would give it Best Picture too. I'd get a nob.
I think I could see it getting nominated for Best Screenplay and Best Director. I see it possibly winning Best Screenplay.
I could see that. Yeah. It depends on what we have coming out the gate the end of this year.
Yeah.
But if I had to pick one to make, like, I get, like, if I pick one that's going to win, only one,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to go screenplay because that will,
yeah.
I do think that category seems to speak the hot, they, I don't know why, it just seems the most consistent of, like, they almost get it right every time. Not mm-hmm. every, and there's always probably exceptions.
Well, also, if a film gets Best Director, that's very rarely the only award it gets.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'd go with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing a thing right now. I'm trying to go back and watch every movie that was nominated for Best Screenplay.
Oh, wow.
But I don't have money to rent movies, so I have to, like, ask around.
Last year didn't, this was, I think, Best Adaptation, Call Me By Your Name won.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do believe that one.
Yeah.
That, I already watched everything mm-hmm. from last year.
Mm-hmm.
The last movie I just watched was from last year because I'm going backwards mm-hmm. rather than starting like old timey movies.
Yeah.
I was like, this is going to be easier if I go backwards. And I watched something recently. Oh, I watched Manchester by the Sea.
Oh, I still haven't seen that.
It's good.
Yeah.
It didn't blow me away, but it was good.
Yeah. I have the screener for it. I should check it out.
I kind of want to go back and watch all the nominations for actor because I like Casey Isaac's fine. He's done terrible things now, but performance wise, I didn't see it.
Well, I think
I think it's a good performance. Don't get me wrong; it's not like bad acting.
Well, I haven't seen it, so I haven't. I can't really.
But again,
say.
I didn't see the thing. It didn't do the thing that I think it did for everybody else.
Because the thing is, I remember when I saw Darkest Hour. Within the first scene with Gary Oldman, I'm like, oh, he's gonna win.
Right.
I was like, this is outstanding.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But again, awards, the tough thing about awards is sometimes they do makeups.
Yeah.
Because I do think.
I mean, it's as political as prom. What are you gonna do?
It's a popularity contest a lot of the times.
Yeah. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, you're fine. Did you ever see Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy?
Yes, I fell asleep. And
that's the movie I think Gary Oldman should have won for. He's so brilliant in that. In my
I
opinion.
Guess I'll give it another chance.
You don't have to. I'm not telling you to do that.
Well,
it got
so highly reviewed. Okay. Well, Dave, if people liked this movie, what other movies would you recommend?
That is a good question. I think you have to go back and watch Taxi Driver.
Definitely.
Because I do think Indy Impaul has said that this movie, Taxi Driver, and another movie I haven't seen of his called like something with Willem Dafoe, and I'm forgetting the
name.
Is
it The Passion of the Christ?
No, it's, oh gosh, it's something like, I'm stalling on this podcast by looking it up because I want to state, because I'm going to go out of my way to watch it, so I'm going to tell the listeners to watch it along with me. Because he says it's, Paul Schrader has cited that these movies are, okay, it's called Light Sleeper.
Okay.
I think it's about a drug addict or a drug dealer.
Mm-hmm.
But he says Taxi Driver, Light Sleeper, and First Reformed technically are like all the same character at different points.
I've seen Taxi Driver and I could definitely see.
Yeah, Taxi Driver, I haven't seen it in a long time. I own it, but I think I still own it.
I haven't seen it in a while, but that's a movie that I vividly remember.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It put him and Scorsese on the map, and there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
But it's like, you look at it, you're like, oh, it is a man who's a crisis of faith. It's just not faith in religion. It's faith in humanity.
Yeah.
In a sense.
And like, ambiguous ending.
Yeah, totally. So if you like that, I would check that out. Check out Light Sleeper with me. If you want to venture into transcendental film, I would just say, I can't speak for Ozu or Dreyer, other than I think Carl Dreyer did do The Passion of Joan of Arc, which is a silent movie. I think is, if you're a film...
It's supposed to be a classic, though.
Yeah, and I love it.
Yeah.
It is. If you're a film lover, I'd say go out of your way mm-hmm. to do it. Don't do it if you're just a casual film person. Because it's a silent... I think that silent era, you kind of... I personally think you have to love film to watch those silent movies.
They require some patience.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but if you're not into that, check out Bresson. And I would say start with... I would say Ah Hazard, Balthazar, and Mouchette.
Okay.
Mouchette's a very depressing movie, just to warn you all.
It sounds fun.
It's not.
Okay.
But there, or in the other one, Pickpocket, which Paul Schrader is the one that inspired him to write his book about.
Okay.
Is a good Bresson movie.
Ooh. Well,
yeah, that's it.
Dave, is there anything you would like to plug?
You can follow me on Twitter at Hobbit138, as well as the same handle on Instagram. I have a podcast that's out on the same network called Ah Crap, a Hellboy podcast with me and Kate Thompson, where we go through the Hellboy chronologically, all the comic books, as well as any supplementary material, including the movies. Just listen to us on that. And then if you see me, say hi. Oh, and you could see me do improv in Los Angeles called Small Town. We will be at UCB. I don't have dates just yet.
But are you still
we
doing
definitely got a future run for another 3 months by the time this is coming out.
Are you still doing Story Pirates?
I am a story pirate. I started directing this year.
Oh, fun.
And I've had a good time with it. Hopefully they like me and I keep directing.
Well, for those of you that are lucky enough to see a story pirate show, check out Dave.
It's going to be mostly kids.
Mostly kids and teachers. Well, if you liked what you heard, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can email us at indiedarlingspodcast@gmail.com. Movie ideas or questions, comments. You could also follow us on Instagram or Twitter at Indie Darlings Podcast. Thank you.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Beth.
And we host Everything is Rent, a podcast about the Broadway musical Rent.
Every week, we're joined by a hilarious guest to talk about one of Rent's 525,600 songs.
We'll answer questions like, is Rent the best musical of all time?
Has Rent aged well?
Are they not going to pay rent?
The answer to all these questions is yes.
That's Everything is Rent on Campfire Media or wherever you get your podcasts.
Campfire.